On this episode of Gun Talk Hunt, we're talking feeders. Why I run them, why you should, and if you're not, you better rethink your life choices. All that here on Gun Talk Hunt. All right, welcome in all you Gun Talk hunters and huntresses. We're in another week of Gun Talk Hunt, and I woke up this morning and I chose violence because I'm going to jump into feeders. So deer feeders, turkey feeders, quail feeders, all that good stuff. I'm going over a review of a lot of the ones that I've used in the past, the problems I have, how I can maintain them, why I use them, why you should use them. Even if you don't plan on hunting it, it's a great possibility that you should use it. But this Gun Talk Hunt is brought to you by Vortex Optics, Hodgdon Gunpowder, you know, the gunpowder people, and Timney Triggers, the world's finest triggers. Thank you for all your support, guys. You guys are the best. Okay, let's jump into it. Let's give you a rundown of kind of what feeders are. If you're new to hunting, I'm sure this is nothing new to you, but feeders are an attractant. A lot of folks are going to put corn, some soybeans in there, whatever it might be. Protein feeders are another option if you want to enhance the milk production of your does and the antler growth of your bucks. And I'm going to primarily touch on deer feeding and the principles behind it and how I set them up, really. So why do I do them? Okay, when I started out in the early stages of my hunting career, I didn't know a lot. And sometimes, you walk around, you look for sign, you see a deer track and you're like, all right, I'm on them right now. And then you see, some scat or whatever it is, some deer droppings. And then you get really excited and you're like, they're in this area. And then you come back later on in the year and they're not there. Well, feeders are a way to get deer into that area or to keep them there as a source of food. I'd prefer, I start my deer feeding. I try to feed year round when I can get some protein in those feeders. But living so far away from my hunting grounds, which my primary deer whitetail hunting grounds are in Oklahoma, I'm all the way down in Louisiana. So it's really difficult for me to continually watch and maintain those feeders. But I found one that's really, really good. And I'm going to get to that here in a little bit, but I really want to touch on the why, because I know there's a lot of resentment towards folks that hunt over feeders. And in the early part of my career as a hunter, man, you just want to be successful. You want to see deer, you want to, have those exciting moments of them being very close and not knowing you're there. And that's the reason why I started using deer feeders, because you could plan the time out of when you think they might arrive. But as I grew as a hunter, I've started to understand how deer kind of shift their movements around feeders. And how they approach feeders. Different bucks and different does approach feeders completely different. Your 1-2-year-olds, some 3-year-olds, man, they just rush in. They rush in without unabatement, and they are there. You can plan their movements. And that's what it was all about for me as a young hunter, was seeing those deer. And I didn't mind taking them. But as I evolved, I started seeing a pattern, and I would mark this down in notes. I would mark down, every time the feeder would go off and I was in the stand, I would have a log of what deer came in, how long they stayed, and what their reaction was on different days, because, the feeder would go off on a day where it was really windy and they'd be in a heartbeat, and maybe a day when it wasn't as windy, it'd take them a little bit longer to get in. And what were the other animals doing around it? So you get hogs into a feeder and all of a sudden, like, now your deer start leaving the area because those hogs are using it so much. So there's a problem there, right? So you see that kind of outlook on it. So pigs have a huge, they shift, and cattle do the same thing. Cattle shift the movement of deer movement as well. So you got your feeder set up. You're only seeing young deer. How do you shoot big bucks off of feeders? One, you get off of them. And what do I mean by that? So I've started seeing a pattern. I guess it was, you know, 3 or 4 years into my hunting around feeders process. And I noticed young deer, but early season, now before season, like I start setting up my feeders in probably 1st of July, somewhere around mid-July, somewhere around there. And then I'll feed all the way through probably January, and then I stop, and then I'll switch over to protein. Because there's a whole thing around that. This is, I know you guys are sitting here listening to the radio, so I'm like, man, get to your freaking point. And I'll get there. But how do you kill big deer off of feeders? Well, you get off of them. You start looking at the travel patterns outside of the feeder, because big bucks are smart and they use secondary trails and secondary, you know, pathways to scent check fields and to scent check bedding areas and to scent check feeders, because they know does are going to congregate around those areas. So if you're wanting to kill big deer off of feeders, don't hunt the feeders, hunt the fringe edges of them. You know, you hunt on the outskirts of them, because how many times have we been sitting over a feeder and you're waiting, and then it's last few seconds of light and you catch a glimpse of an absolute giant. Well, he knows, he's been there the whole time. He's just been on those outside fringes. And so I'll back up 200-300 yards from a feeder, and I can't see the feeder. I know it's there, but I'm hunting those fringe trails, those really lightly traveled trails where it just looks, you can kind of tell there's a travel corridor there, but it's very gently used. Though that's your big buck trail. That's where I'm setting up. And it's always on the downwind side. I'll set around, you know, four different sets around a feeder, depending on prominent wind directions and everything else. That way I'm not crowding that feeder and entering, because this happens to me all the time. Like if, especially like with youth hunters and stuff like that, when you're coming in with them and you're setting on a feeder and you're overlooking it, you're always going to bump deer. I hate doing that. I hate it with a passion. And so really you're looking at setting up those fringe edges. If you really want to kill big bucks, that's what I'm doing. And I noticed this first, really on a media hunt that I took, with Thompson Center and at the Chain Ranch in Oklahoma. So they hadn't hunted this feeder in 2 years. So they set it up, and they didn't hunt it for 2 years. The feeder was, I want to say it was like 230 yards away. You could barely see the feeder, and you couldn't hear it go off in a high wind. There's no way. But what I noticed was all the big bucks, they were coming into this feeder consistently. But they were coming in closer to the stand because they were scent checking the downwind side of that feeder, because it was set up along a ridgeline of hardwoods. And not having hunted it for 2 years, they get more comfortable with it, and they just get used to it, and they don't pay attention to they don't associate the feeder with danger. And that's something that I've been really trying to get used to, is not, you know, setting something up and not hunting for a couple of years. Cause our initial reaction is, man, I got to jump in, I got to hunt this right away. And that's just not always the best way to do things. And It's just one strategy that I've noticed. And especially now, if you're bow hunting, again, I'm still hunting those fringe edges. I'm hunting away from those feeders. And that's kind of unpopular because a lot of guys want to be set up right on the feeder. They see the feeder. But I was only, you know, you were only seeing three-year-old bucks. You would not, anything over four and a half, man, they know the dangers. They know, they've seen their buddies fall. And that's an unfortunate thing because we love seeing deer. You might see less deer hunting on those fringe edges, but I promise you that is where you need to be if you're going to want to kill big bucks. And man, especially when you get them chasing during the year, those does are going to stay around those feed sources. So, if you're feeding protein, I would highly suggest having a water source close by. They love having a water source because, you know, those high protein rich food plots or feeders, having a water source close by, they're able to get that water, come in protein, get a drink on their way out, and it's all kind of right there. So highly recommend that. We're going to step in here and I'm going to tell you about Hodgdon gunpowder. You know, their 4350 is amazing for your hunting rifles. And if you're not reloading with that 4350, heck, if you can find it right now, buy it. Because if you're getting into reloading, and I'm having a hard time finding it right now as well, but I've kind of substituted that with Varget. And if you guys are familiar with Varget, you know the smell. So I've started to use a little bit more Varget because I cannot find the 4350. So just a little tip for you guys. If you're looking for a nice substitute for your 4350, start messing around with Varget. I think you're going to like that. And Hodgdon, they are the gunpowder people. They know the gunpowder. And if you're starting to reload, or you're a seasoned reloader, you know HodgdonReloading.com is where you find all your information, and you can find loads for everything. You can find your pistol loads, your 300 Blackout, your 6.5 Creedmoors, your 6mm, your 6 GTs. Everything is on HodgdonReloading.com. Give them a look there. And Vortex, okay, you guys know it. Vortex just launched a new line of rangefinders. They've relaunched their Fury HDs, their Razor HDs, their Copperhead, their Viper HDs, Crossfire HD, and Diamondback HD rangefinders. Why is a rangefinder important? Well, because it helps you be more accurate in what the Razor HD has done, which is probably one of my favorites. It's very slim line. It's got a rugged feel to it, non-slip grip all the way around, easy controls and easy access. But it boasts, and I'm not lying here, this is what I've seen from it, a range out to 4,000 yards on a reflective surface. That's really cool. And, you know, they've got all the ballistics dialed in there. So go give them a look at vortexoptics.com. I think you'll be impressed with what they got going on over there. Okay. Now you're probably wondering, why on earth would you feed? And there's a whole conglomerate of folks out there, and I'm using a lot of big words for me today. So bear with me, and I'm going to probably mispronounce 90 of them and misuse 100% of them. But there's a large contingent. See, there's another one. There's a lot of people out there that look down on feeding. And if you can't, you know, pattern a deer, and if you can't really focus in on a deer's bedding area, you have to use a feeder. You're wrong. Okay. I don't hunt feeders anymore. And I know that goes against everything I just told you in the front end of the segment. I still run feeders. I still run them. You know why? Because I love introducing new hunters and youth to the sport of hunting. And how do I make it more successful for them? They see deer. Okay. Whether you believe it or not, whether you use a feeder or you don't, if you're vehemently against using a feeder, man, you got to have a good hunting spot. Or, you know, hunting over a cornfield to me is almost similar. You know, you're you're seeing more deer, you're seeing more movement. And that really is our driving force. We want to see those animals. We want to see how they react to each other. And we want to be a part of their experience. And for me, utilizing a feeder is just that. It's for new hunters. It's for guys that I take out to the field that I want to be successful. I want them to see deer and to see what I get to see on a daily basis. And now I start weaning them off, and that's where they start getting a little nervous. And I'll use feeders almost sometimes as a last ditch effort. If I'm like, okay, the buddy I've got coming out, he needs to see a deer. He needs to get on a deer. And I had that same experience this past season where I've got a buddy, he's a firefighter, great guy. And he was typically hunting Mississippi, Louisiana, and he would see, I don't know, probably, you know, he was hunting pretty good in Mississippi, and he'll probably see maybe, you know, 20 to 30 deer a year, which is, and a lot of these are 20 to 30 of the same deer. Well, on my place, what I've got set up is I've got a feeder that's about 200 yards out, and you'll see probably, you could see close to 20 to 30 deer a day. And then, you know, once he sees that and goes, oh my gosh, like, look at this. This is amazing. Like, he's kind of hooked on Oklahoma right now. He's like, man, they've got deer everywhere. Well, yeah, I've concentrated them. I've got the right property. It's in the right spot. But it allowed him to see something different. And then I took him outside and said, okay, now here's how we're going to hunt. And it's not feeder. It's a run and gun style of hunting. But it was outside of those feeder lines that I've talked about earlier. It's outside those edges. And they, man, he was shocked then because he saw more big deer. The big deer were outside. They were, you know, they were chasing does and everything else. And then we couldn't get on them. And he came back. He shot one off a feeder. Completely happy. And it was a 3.5-year-old deer. So he gets back and he goes, I really want to go back with you. And that door's always open for me. And I say, absolutely. He goes, but I don't want to hunt the feeder. Well, because he saw it. He saw there's a 3.5-year-old difference. Like there is a line that feeder has drawn in the sand. It's almost like that, you know, they won't go past that line. 3.5-year-old and under, they're all in. Let's go. 4.5-year-old, they're staying away. And he saw that, and he saw how big a deer are out there. And then on the other scale, I've got my sons. Now, one son, he's 13 years old, and he's now ready to go, well, I see how dad hunts. Now I want to do that, but I'm still trying to raise up an 8-year-old who has the attention span of a gnat. He's off. Like, he's like, all right, where are the deer? Okay, there they are. That's awesome. And he sits there and watches them. He loves seeing the deer and how they interact with each other. But sometimes we get dialed into the hunt and we forget to experience the pursuit. And that to me is what he's all about right now. He wants to see the action, and that happens in front of that feeder, and that happens around the feeder. And we had a 3.5-year-old run right in front of the blind, and he chased a doe right in front of the blind and was around the blind in front of the feeder for, I don't know, 2 hours, just chasing. And he may not have seen that if I was walking his little legs off out in the field on a giant walkabout pursuit. That wouldn't happen. So if you're sitting there and you're very high and mighty about the use of feeders and you're totally against it, reconsider like how you look at it, because there are other reasons. There are other people using and utilizing feeders aside from just shooting them over one. And here's a prime example. Texas this year, I was invited on a hunt, and it was with Silencer Central, and I did everything I could to hunt the outside edges of feeder units or feeder areas to, and the deer were coming in. This is a, you know, a 16,000 high fence hunt. That's a whole nother subject, and that's a whole nother violent day that I will encounter at one time, and I'll have someone on here who is really against it. If you're really against it, reach out to me. I'll have you on. We'll have a friendly conversation about it. But I could not. We were looking for 150-inch deer, like a specific one, and we went to multiple areas trying to find a deer. Couldn't find him. And last evening of the hunt, I was like, fine, I'll sit in a box blind. The feeder's 200 yards away. He was there. Okay. Like it just worked out. And I'm thankful it did because I got to bring some meat home. Sometimes, I mean, it's okay. It's okay. It'll be fine. If you choose a feeder, it'll be fine. But just don't give up on them so quick because, man, if you're in big hardwoods and you're in big pines, good gosh, man, like how do you find deer in some of those areas, like where your shot may only be 15 yards? You got to concentrate them somehow. And if you don't have big excavators and you don't have the means or to plant, why not use them? Why not? I'm just saying. All right. Word from our sponsors, Sig Sauer. Many of you know I've got the Cross Rifle. It's available in 277 Sig Fury, 308, 6.5 Creedmoor. And I can't say any more, but they're coming with some other stuff. I've already said too much, but the Cross Rifle is by far one of my favorite. And especially if you're a run and gun hunter like myself, if you head out west and you don't want a big, a big suitcase bogging you down, my recommendation, what I've done before, is get a Sig rifle. They weigh 6.6 pounds. They're lightweight. They're very accurate. Threaded barrel. You can attach a suppressor on it, which I highly recommend. I love it. My boys love it. But check them out at SigSauer.com. I think you'll like what you see. The Cross Rifle is legit. And Timney Triggers. I replace all my triggers. Almost all of them. But the Remington 700 I've outfitted on my custom rifle, I absolutely love. And I think I can speak for everyone around the Gun Talk offices that have seen me do gunsmithing work. I am not one. However, I can do this. And so if you're like me, if you're a guy who just likes to mess around with kind of easy gunsmithing projects, replacing your trigger with a Timney trigger is probably the simplest task you will have on your plate. I cleaned a gun a few weeks ago, and I can tell you it was easier than that. So find out more at timneytriggers.com. All right. We've gone down the what, the how, the why. Now, which one? Because there's a lot of feeder companies out there. And I want to first say this podcast, this Gun Talk Hunt podcast, is not brought to you by any feeder company, Moultrie, none of those. So just a heads up, everything I say from this point forward is simply and purely based off of personal experience. There is one feeder that I have found that is indestructible from cattle and hogs. Those are your two nemesis right there. Because cattle will get in there, they'll rub up on the legs, they'll bend the legs. You're going to go into your feeder set, or you're going to go set that feeder, and it's going to be trashed. Okay. But there's one company that I've used, and now I haven't used all of them. This is the one that I put my money towards and I purchased, and it took me a couple of years to save up for it. I'm not going to lie. It's a more expensive one, but you'll like what you get. It's from HB Hunting Products. And I don't know why, but their site is down and I'm scared to death. They're not producing them anymore, but you can find them at, various, grain or feed stores and stuff like that. So my best advice is to go onto a Google or something like that. Type in HB feeder. It's the HB 1000 pound easy reach feeder. So it sits lower and it holds 1,000 pounds of whatever you want to put in it. Early season, I'm putting corn, and then I'm going to transition to, like, when it gets into December, a corn and soybean mixture. I don't put a lot of attractants in my feeders. I don't know why I don't, because I figure the deer will find them. And some of the, like, you know, any of the cornmeal or anything like that that I would throw out, I haven't found that they like it as much in my area. I know a lot of guys have, you know, different mixtures that they'll put that they absolutely love. But, oh, yeah, hogs love anything. So whatever you're putting in, if you got hogs in the area, just plan on shooting every hog that comes into that. But the HB feeder, and I did a video on this a few years ago, and my recommendation, and it still is to this day, is to save up your money, buy the very best you can. Little flimsy legs you got for, like, the poles that they use typically on, like, a Moultrie feeder that you'll buy. I just haven't found that those are effective, or they stand the test of time. I've got too many that are down, and the head unit on the HB feeder is tough. Well, just how tough is it? Okay, so this year, and I've talked about it before on the show, my son's sitting there. He lets the deer clear the feeder. He shoots the deer. Deer runs off dead within 15 yards. Awesome shot. Great job. The next morning I go out, and that was when my buddy came in to hunt, and I set it, and feeder didn't go off. I thought, well, that's, I heard it run, but it didn't go off. So I go up and I check it, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, it looks okay. And that's it. So I open the feeder unit, which is enclosed by a cage, which is just long enough so raccoons can't get into there. So that's another bonus of it, that this is indestructible from raccoons. And I've had this feeder for 5 years, same feeder. So anyway, I open it up. Open up the feeder head unit, which is very easy, very robust. It, and I look at the timer, and the timer is kind of still working. And I examine it, and it's kind of protruding through the feeder head unit a little bit. And I look on the backside of it, and I'm going, someone shot my feeder. I have no, and the timer was kind of still working, but it wouldn't relay. There was no relay from the timer unit to the feeder head unit. So there was a disconnect there. So what I figured out, and I still have the timer to this day because it was an amazing shot, is my son shot the deer. The bullet traveled through the deer, ricocheted off, and made a perfect puncture wound in the timer of the feeder unit. It still works. I replaced the timer on it. The whole feeder still works. So again, this is not a paid endorsement from HB feeders. I'm just trying to give you guys the best information possible on feeder units. You know, it is a little bit more robust of a feeder unit, but this does a couple things. So I fill it in July, and I don't refill it until after rifle season. So I'm feeding all that 1,000 pounds through basically my entire deer season. So you don't have to go into those areas. Buy the biggest you can. I mean, they've got some that are bigger than this, but this is the one that I've used with great success. So, okay, I think that ends our talk about feeders. I've probably made a lot of you mad right now, and that's okay. I'm cool with that. Send me an email at kj@guntalk.com. If you have a differing opinion, I'd love to hear it. And if you have any other topics you want me to cover, I'd be happy to do so, or any guest you want. So hit me up at kj@guntalk.com. And as always, guys, keep those muzzles pointed in a safe direction, and always be on the hunt.